When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Diary. Happy Tuesday. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. We have a busy show for you. Haley McGoldrick from Sportsnet.ca stops by to chat all about Caitlin Clark and what is going on in the WNBA right now. Then we have some CFL power rankings to get to. And, of course, Game 2 Stanley Cup Final between the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers. It should be a very fun one. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. Let's get to the conversation with Haley McGoldrick. Very pleased to be joined now by Sportsnet.ca superstar Haley McGoldrick as we get set to cover a wide range of topics here. Haley, thank you for doing this. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you very much. Let's start in the WNBA. Caitlin Clark has been getting a bit of attention, I'm sure you have noticed. Her play has got a lot of coverage, and then the coverage of her play has gotten a lot of coverage, and that coverage has gotten coverage as well. It has been quite the... I don't want to say circus because that, I think, puts maybe a bit more of a negative connotation on it than I want, but it's been quite the spectacle, Caitlin Clark in the WNBA so far. Let's start with how she is playing the sport of basketball. I think that there have been maybe a few nights that have been a bit more frustrating for her than she would have been used to, but that is the adjustment coming into the pros. What have you made of her transition here into the WNBA?
I think the biggest thing is that people were expecting like 40-point games out of her, like from game one, and that's just not how it's going to happen. Like, she's playing the best women's basketball players in the world, and she's been doing pretty decently as well. Of course, there's some games. I know when she played the Liberty, they held her to 3 points. It wasn't a great game. But other than that, she's had some really good showings. But again, I think that the expectations are so high for her because she was so good in college. But the transition from college to the pros is so different for any athlete, really. And I get that there are some anomalies and there are some players who are stellar from game one as soon as they step in the pros. But that's just not how it's going to happen. And of course, there's been some physicality as well. It's a physical league. You know, she's been getting tossed around a little bit. Some of them more flagrant than others, of course. But I think, yeah, I think expectations for her have just been so high. And also, she was the number one draft pick, which meant she was going to a team that didn't do very well. And the Fever have not been good in quite a few years. That's why they got Aaliyah Boston last year as well. So I think she's doing fine for herself. She's going to have off games. She's still adjusting, but I just think people expected so much out of her from day one. And so people are disappointed because she's not putting up 50 points the second she stepped on a WNBA court.
Yeah, she's not the combination of LeBron and Steph Curry at the same time in their peaks, 13 games into her pro career. How dare she? Like, the expectations are insane on her, and it felt like there was no way she could possibly live up to them regardless of what she did. And now she's just having a good rookie season, and it feels like it's the sky is falling.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she's doing fine. Like, she's adjusting well. She's had some really good games. She's had some off games. You see players a decade into their career who do the exact same things. They'll drop 40 points one night and have a stinker the next night. Like, it is what it is. That's being a professional athlete playing in the pros. You're not going to be perfect every single game.
Right. Jason Tatum has had two bad games in the finals. Like, he's one of the best players in the world. So these sorts of things happen. When you look at her game and kind of now adapting it to the WNBA style, is there a part of what she is doing that she needs to kind of work on and grow on? Like, where is the growth and where does it need to come from for her?
I think the biggest thing for her is that, like, A, she has to adjust to the physicality. And again, like, there's been some instances where they've just been completely, like, flagrant fouls. That's not something you need to adjust to. But for sure, you see her go up to the rim sometimes, and you're going up against players who are 6'6", some of the best blockers, defenders in the league, and you're not going to get that shot up. That's okay. You know, she does have good court vision, maybe using that a little bit more. She's got some great players on her team. Kelsey Mitchell's a really good scorer. Obviously, Aaliyah Boston's really good in the paint. Getting the ball to them a little bit more. But she has been doing a good job of to begin with. But I think it's just like an adjustment thing. Like you said, she hasn't even played 20 games in the WNBA yet. Like she's still growing. I'm sure she'll find her shot. She'll find her rhythm. She is playing some of the best defenders in the world. So you're not going to get the space you probably would in college. You're not going to be able to fake people out the way you would in college. But I think it's just a matter of time. Like there's nothing that looks super, super concerning to me, at least, about her game right now. It's just she's a rookie adjusting.
Yeah, and the playmaking thing I think is interesting because not only are you playing against the best players you've ever played against, you're probably also playing with the best players you've ever played with. And so that can be a bit of a thing where you're used to like, all right, hop on, let's roll. I'm gonna get 40, we're gonna score 60, and we're gonna try to win this game. You have teammates that you can use now, maybe a little bit more than you could in the past, with all due respect to former Iowa teammates and whatnot.
No, absolutely. I agree. And you look, you see some of her teammates, like Kate Martin is doing great on the Aces. They love her. There's some of her teammates that won't play in the WNBA and their college career is going to end at the end of their time at Iowa. That's just what it is. But like you said, this definitely is some of the best players she's ever played with in her career. So it's an adjustment both on that part individually, but also like the chemistry as well and learning like, yeah, you're not going to be like Caitlin Clark is going to be still double teamed in situations and things like that. But also like you have players on your team who are also capable of putting up 30 points per game. And so giving them the ball is totally fine. But she's doing a good job that she's not being a ball hog. She's not, you know, again, it's just kind of that adjustment period for sure.
No, totally. In terms of how it's been covered, this has obviously brought a lot of eyeballs to the WNBA in ways that that just hadn't been before. And I think what we're noticing now is the problem with that is those eyeballs are attached to a lot of people with some weird takes on some things, and not always the most intellectual, well thought out opinions on such things. So what have you made of the difference in coverage? Because you've been covering this league for a long time now. The difference in coverage from, let's just go last year to this year.
Yeah, it's completely different. And I've had this conversation with friends so many times because it's so true. It's like you've got all these eyes on the sport now, which is great, obviously. The thing is, people act like the league, number one, was not growing before Caitlin Clark, which simply isn't true. You look at the Las Vegas Aces, they sold out 19 of their 20 home games this season. They're not playing the Fever 19 times. Like, that's due to the fact that the Aces are back-to-back champions. They've got players like Asia Wilson, Kelsey Plum, Jackie Young, Chelsea Gray. Like, they have a really talented roster that people want to go watch. It's not just because of her. And I think the biggest thing, too, is that people who they might be basketball fans, but like watching the NBA for the last 20 years does not equate to knowing women's basketball, especially knowing the players and everything. You might know the game and the mechanics of the game, but knowing the players and the circumstances. And I feel like there's just so many people now who have been watching women's basketball specifically, maybe for the last 4 months, essentially since March Madness and then to now, or even if they were watching Caitlin Clark in college, they weren't paying attention to the WNBA until now. And then all of a sudden they've got all these opinions on players and teams. And it's like, what? Like, you don't even really have to be around that long to understand teams and their lore and things like that, but just kind of like catching up, like educating yourself. But they just don't do that. They literally just have an opinion and roll with it. Like, the whole discourse when Asia Wilson got her shoe, and people were saying, oh, Nike only did this because Caitlin Clark got a shoe. And it's like, obviously, yes, they would have had to be in development for a little while, but they also, the shoe's not coming out till 2025. So it's still a long ways away. So I think they kind of sped up that process. But then people are like, well, Asia didn't get a shoe before this because Asia's not a marketable player. Nobody knows who she is. Like, she's a two-time MVP, she's won Defensive Player of the Year, two-time WNBA champion, all-star. Like, people know who Asia Wilson is, but these people come in who don't really know about the sport and they just say, well, I don't know who she is, so nobody knows who she is. And it's like, well, that's not really how it works. I feel like people just kind of are loud and wrong. That's the biggest thing. And also, even I saw something last night about SportsCenter posted about the Connecticut Sun, and the Sun defeated the Fever, and the post was about Dejanay Carrington, like apparently mocking Caitlin Clark, like for a foul or something like that. And it's just like the Sun, their streak was ended by the Liberty, but they were on an undefeated streak to start the season. They're a red hot team. They look like they could be a title contender, and they've always been up there the past couple of seasons when Curt Miller was on the team. They went to the WNBA semifinals 4 year seasons in a row. Like, they're a really good team, but like, that's the coverage you're getting instead. Like, it's still kind of centered around Caitlin Clark, and it's like, this has nothing to do with the actual game. And it's like, I think Caitlin's probably tired of it too. Like, no matter what she does, the discourse is surrounded around her, and she's like, it gets old because it's like, A, the Fever are not a great team. They have a lot of great players. They're just still finding their footing. And again, you don't get the last two number one overall picks if you're a good team. So they just haven't really found their way. And the losses are being blamed on her and her play. And then even other teams aren't like, you play Caitlin Clark, then the discourse is all around her. It has nothing to do with your team. If you win, your players who stood out, it's just around her. So I think that's the biggest shift in coverage, is that it's just like, A, the poor girl's probably exhausted and tired of just like all the discourse being surrounded around her. But also, I just find so many people really don't know what they're talking about and don't care to educate themselves. That's the biggest thing. It's one thing to not know, but it's another thing to completely be like, and I don't care to know.
Right, exactly. But you're going to hear very loudly what I think I know. And that's where a lot of the problems I think do kind of come from. And then the most recent one too is the excuse me, the Olympics and her being left off the American Olympic team, and the how dare you, this is supposed to be growing the game and blah 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 blah. It's like I don't know who the Caitlin Clark of volleyball is, but there isn't these discussions around anything else, but it happens to be around this particular thing. And now look, like if we could find a way, like I don't know if she's vacationed in Vancouver at all, or if she walked through Scarborough Town Center once and we can kind of like get some kind of like Canada tie into this, like we could give it a go. But I have found this whole thing where it's like, I don't think Stephen A. Smith, not to single one person, but he is the loudest. I don't think Stephen A. Smith has talked about the women's Olympic basketball team selections for 0.1 seconds of his life before now. But now we are experts on how this team is selected. It's mind-boggling to me.
No, exactly. And if you look at the list, like the talent is crazy on that list. They've obviously
Right.
got veterans like Diana Taurasi, Brittany Griner, like those names, Asia Wilson, again, Breanna Stewart, who is one of the most decorated basketball players, not even just in women's sports, in sports in general. Anything that any trophy that you could win, Breanna Stewart has won it. You've got Sabrina Ionescu, you've got Jewell Loyd, you've got Alyssa Thomas, you've got so many incredible players on this roster. And there's other players outside of Caitlin Clark who maybe should. You could Arike Ogunbowale, she's an incredible scorer, she's an incredible player. She didn't make the Olympic team. Like, it's not even just about Caitlin Clark. There are so many other players. You only have 12 spots on this roster. Like, out of all of the talent in women's basketball, you're only trying to make a roster of 12 spots. And so everyone's saying, like, again, Caitlin Clark, like, Caitlin Clark is very young. She will have her opportunities. You're still going to try to win a gold medal, and you need to put your best players out there. And this is what USA Basketball thought. There's not one player on there that I think, oh, Caitlin Clark should be on that team over that player. Like, that's the thing. Again, people don't know these players. They don't know Jackie Young. They don't know Kelsey Plum. They don't know Kalia Copper. And they don't understand. And they just think, well, Caitlin Clark should be in front of these players. It's like, these players are all such incredible players. And yeah, Caitlin Clark is incredible too. But like, it doesn't diminish the accomplishments of these other players as well.
It's so funny how it's like, oh, she's struggling in the WNBA. She hasn't figured it out. She's going to be a bust. She's going to be whatever. What do you mean she's not one of the 12 best American players of all in the league right now? How could we possibly do this? Like, it's like, how do you make that make sense in your head? But it's been quite the thing, and I'm sure I'm not breaking any news to you with all of that. What is one of the stories in the WNBA that probably hasn't been covered the way it should be because a lot of the oxygen's been taken up by the Caitlin Clark stuff.
There's a few, like I said, the Connecticut Sun, they are no longer undefeated, but they had a really good run that I feel like not enough people were talking about. Even Asia Wilson, she's been having an incredible start to the season, and she's such a high caliber player. You expect it out of her, but she's just been on a tear. She is so incredible, and I feel like that's not getting enough attention. Even one kind of on the bad side of things, like the Washington Mystics, the poor Washington Mystics, they are not having a great season. Like, as much as the Fever are losing, the Mystics are losing more, and you know, things just aren't clicking for them, and they've had a tough season because Elena Delladon said she's not coming back, and then they've had a bunch of roster moves, and just they're still trying to find their footing. But those are all kind of storylines that I think WNBA diehards know of, but on the outside of media, people would let be like, what's going on? Like, I didn't know Asia Wilson was on such a tear, because a lot of the media is just centered around Caitlin Clark. I didn't know that the Washington Mystics were that bad, because which is, I guess, good for the Washington Mystics that people aren't paying attention to all of their losses. But you know, those are kind of storylines that I think are getting missed throughout all of this.
I did want to bring up the Connecticut Sun. I haven't. I'm not just bringing it up because you've said it twice. I did have it written down to talk about them after their win yesterday. Dejounay, with 22 points, a season high. Like you said, that this team has been on a tear. Specifically, what has been working for them so far this year?
They just have so much talent, and the biggest thing I find with them is that they have a lot of talent that has been around for a while, not even just in the league, like on the team. Their chemistry is so strong because Dawana Bonner's been there for a few seasons, Breonna Jones been there for a few seasons, Alyssa Thomas has been there for a few seasons, Dejounay Carrington's been there for a few seasons now. Like, their core is a lot of people who have been there for a while, because that's the biggest thing, especially this early in the season, is a lot of the time teams struggle with their chemistry. Like, you look at the Washington Mystics, they have a lot of talent, but there's a lot of moving pieces on that team. They lost Natasha Cloud, she was really a leader on that team. Whereas the Sun just have so much talent. Like, Alyssa Thomas is essentially like a triple double machine. She is so talented. Like, she is a player. She's dealt with some injuries in her time, but she's phenomenal. I think the Sun maybe could have gone a little bit farther in some certain seasons if she wasn't injured. Dawana Bonner is incredible. Breonna Jones won Most Improved Player a few seasons ago. Dejounay, she was a second round draft pick, and she's worked her way and stayed with this team and has shown she deserves to be in the WNBA. So I think that they just have, and they picked up a lot of really good pieces in the last season or two as well. They picked up Tyasha Harris, they picked up Rachel Banham. They've got a lot of pieces from other teams as well that really fit in with them. And sometimes you look at their roster and you're like, how did you get all of these players on one roster? Like, it seems almost unfair that they've got this stacked team, it seems like. But you know, you look at some of their players and you're like, okay, well, how did Tiffany Mitchell come on this team? Tiffany Mitchell's really talented. You look at Olivia Nelson-Ododa. Like, they just have so much talent on this team, and I think the biggest thing is that their core has been around for so long, and then they're just adding such great players that their chemistry is forming so quickly.
Connecticut can have their time in the sun, pardon the pun. They're really just killing time till Toronto gets there and Canada takes over. The Toronto news came a few days after you and I had the conversation, and I brought up that maybe let's just have a Canadian division, eight teams. Let's just roll with it. So we're an eighth of the way there, but how excited are you that Toronto is finally getting a WNBA team?
Oh my God, I'm so excited. It feels like it's so long overdue at this point. Like, you've seen the two Canada games now who have had thousands of people in attendance. The fact that Canada in general is just getting all these women's sports is really incredible. But I think that it's been a long time coming. This is obviously a country, not even just Toronto and the province, but the country loves basketball. You've seen how they've rallied around the Toronto Raptors, and you see how the support both the senior men's and senior women's Canadian national teams, even the 3x3 team that's going to Paris. Like, this country just loves basketball so much. So I feel like it was only a matter of time. And I think it was a little bit disheartening when the MLSE bid was rejected because people thought that was the only way. So it's really great to see Larry Tannenbaum go out with his private group and do this, because I can see, like, already going to Coca-Cola Coliseum is huge because that holds almost 9,000 people. Everybody I know put their name down for the season ticket waiting list. Like, it's just so incredible. But I feel like it was never an if, it was a when. Like, we knew that Toronto was going to get a team at some point because this country just loves basketball so much, and we've seen how much this country supports women's sports as well. But I'm just so grateful it's finally here, and 2026 is close enough, but still so far away. I'm like, oh my God, 2 more years. Like, I want it now.
I saw you doing the stuff with Sportsnet social media. Do you have a preference for the name?
I don't. I will say, I've had a few people like bring, this is not my original idea. A few people have said it would be cool to bring back like the Huskies thing, because I know that the Raptors really don't do a lot with it. I think a few seasons ago they had like one game that they brought back the Toronto Huskies and like did the court, but it's not like the way they do the OVO where they do it often. Like, I think I can literally remember one time that the Raptors have done the Husky. So I'd love to see the women's side bring that Husky name and that colorway and that branding. Also, because too, a lot of people want to keep it in the dinosaur theme, but they're not sister teams. Like, the way that the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Minnesota Lynx are like literally brother sister teams, or like the Phoenix Suns and Phoenix Mercury, like, they are the same, you know, branding. Like, this is super separate. Like, the Raptors are owned by MLSE. WNBA Toronto is not part of MLSE. So, like, I wouldn't mind. Like, there's like somebody said like Toronto Triceratops, which is like a mouthful for sure. Or like, there was one I saw a concept jersey of like the Toronto Northern Lights, which would be cool, but that's such a long name to say. Like, I feel like Toronto Huskies is short, to the point. I love the branding. You already got the colorways. I don't know if there's some licensing around it that they'd need to figure out. I have no idea. But if they could make that work, I really like that because it's like, again, there's not really a link between them and the Raptors. So it doesn't need to stay in the dinosaur theme. It doesn't need to be that. So I think the Huskies would be cool.
Shifting gears. And also, I do want to say, I was talking before about how, like, oh, people aren't covering these other things because Caitlin Clark, whatever. Absolutely, people who are clicking on this YouTube video, it's going to be a Caitlin Clark thumbnail, and Caitlin Clark's going to be in the title. Like, I am like just as much of a hypocrite as everyone else is. So I just want to be my self-aware self and let everyone know. Before I let you go, you were at the Formula One race in Montreal this weekend. I am, first of all, incredibly jealous. It's awesome you get to do that. What is like? The race was what it was. What is covering an F1 race like? And what is that like compared to the plethora of other things that you have covered in your time in media?
It's interesting because I will say there's a lot of like high profile people there. And the biggest thing is that, especially in Formula One, I feel like the access to the athletes is so limited. Like, so for both or Ferrari, McLaren, and Aston Martin. So there was a session with Charles and Carlos. They each got like 10 minutes. Lando, 10 minutes. Lance was a little around 10 minutes. It was mostly French media, so they let them go a little longer so they could have just like a little space with just French media. But the access is so limited. Like, I've reached out for one-on-one interviews and like they don't do that. Even like Mercedes Lewis doesn't even do anything in the paddock. He does the TV interview when they were like sit on the couch and like they whatever. But that's like all Lewis really does. He doesn't have like an open media session the way some of the other athletes do. They do it in scrums. It's very limited. It's very like that's it. I had a friend even tell me he interviewed one athlete, and he asked a few questions, and then their team was like, "No, you have to redo the interview. Like, you can't use those questions." So they're very particular with what you ask. Even last year when I interviewed Daniel Ricciardo, it was amazing. He's amazing, but like they asked me to send the questions ahead of time, which like you know in journalism you usually don't do that. You usually just ask them, have a conversation as you go. But I had to send them ahead of time so they could be approved. So it's really like high profile, and I get it because it's like they're high profile athletes. It's a very, rich, high profile sport. But yeah, it's really different. And it's also they give you like 10 minutes, and also they schedule all of the medias like back to back. So like once Lando's scrum was done, we were running to the Ferrari hospitality tent to go interview Charles and Carlos. And then after that, I had a few minutes, and then it was Lance Stroll's. Like, it's very just like you get 10 minutes and that's it. And so that's the biggest thing. Like, I feel like it's a little bit harder to build relationships with the athletes. Of course, there's some of the media who are there at every single race, the people who work for ESPN or Sky Sports or whatever who travel. But for us, like Canadian media, it's like you literally get 10 minutes with this athlete. Like, I had a question I wanted to ask and I didn't get a chance because it was just like, okay, that's 10 minutes, goodbye. So it's very chaotic. It's obviously a lot of fun. It's a very cool sport. I will say, I think that a lot of the athletes in F1 are very open. Like, it's not really like PR answers, like as much as sometimes their people don't really approve of the questions or whatever, like they are very open and honest with the media, which I really like. Like, a lot of them were being asked about the changes that are coming in 2026, and some of them had, some good things to say, some of them had some bad things to say. Even with Carlos Sainz, obviously he doesn't have a seat at Ferrari next year, so where is he signing? And he said himself, oh, there I've seen rumors that myself to Mercedes, like I don't know what that's about. Like, and he could be bluffing, of course, but they say these kinds of things. They're very open and honest with the media. And so it's a lot of fun, but it's very high intensity. And it's also just like the access to the athletes is so hard to get. So you really got to make the most of it because it's not like other sports. You can have a 20-minute conversation. It's like a sit down, chill talk. You're literally like, you have 10 minutes and there's also 30 other people here. So you better make the most of it.
Yeah, I've always kind of got the sense, just looking from the outside looking in, that it was like, you're going to get what you get, and you're going to be damn grateful for the opportunity. Like they know how popular they are. But it's nice that the drivers kind of don't fall into that. Like thinking of how much Verstappen was ripping the Vegas race last year before he won. And just like, could you imagine Connor McDavid going into Florida, like, oh yeah, this was bullshit, the entire thing, just awful. Like I can't imagine any of that would happen. And so it's nice that they're a bit more open about things than maybe the company that employs them is.
No, absolutely. They're very good about it. They're very open and honest. It's not like PR answers. They're very good about it. It's just like they will give you their open and honest answers, but you've got the shortest window ever to try and get them out of it.
Haley, this was awesome. Thank you so much for doing this today. What do you have coming up, and where can people find your work?
I have, well, the Olympics is probably the biggest thing. I've got some Copa America stuff coming up as well. Obviously, WNBA coverage will continue. So that's all coming up. You can find me, my X Twitter is at Goldie on Sports, and you can find most of my writing at sportsnet.ca.
Awesome. This was so much fun, Haley. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job, or your deodorant, or your lunch, or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
All right. Thank you to Haley for stopping by. I really appreciated that. Now it's time for the first edition of CFL Power Rankings. We begin at number 9, and to me, there is only one way you can start these, and that is with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. They struggled against the Calgary Stampeders for most of that game. They did eventually bounce back and make a game of it late, but I thought the offense looked rather pedestrian for a lot of the game. I thought the defense bent but didn't break, and were put in some difficult spots at times, so maybe there's some optimism there, but that was a defense against a Saskatchewan, or sorry, against a Calgary Stampeder offense, that I'm not overly impressed with. So all signs point to this maybe being the worst team in the Canadian Football League this season. Coming in at number 8, it is the Edmonton Elks. I actually came away from this game against Saskatchewan thinking that Edmonton played a pretty strong football game, but mistakes that were made at the end really cost them, and then, quite frankly, just my perception of the team coming into the season had them a little bit low to begin with, so I think that is why they are a little bit lower on my list. At 7, it is the Calgary Stampeders. I thought about putting Edmonton above Calgary, and they may leapfrog the Stampeders very, very soon. I actually think Edmonton is a better team than Calgary is, but the Stampeders come away with a win in week one, and for a lot of that game, they looked like the significantly better team than the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I thought Calgary was able to move the ball at times. They at least were able to get points. I thought the defense looked really strong, and I think that's going to be the calling card for the Stampeder team all season long, is that defense is going to have to win them some football games, and I thought in week one, they did. At 6, it's Ottawa. They didn't play, so there's that. At 5, it is the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Coming off of a down season a year ago, I thought they played a pretty complete football game. I thought offensively they looked good, especially in that fourth quarter. There were some times it was stuck in the mud, and AJ Ouellette certainly had some struggles at the running back spot, but I think they have four receivers that they can trust. They have a quarterback that they really trust, and they have a defense that's going to be a problem in the Canadian Football League's West Division this season. So I like a lot what I saw from the Riders. And again, a reminder, I have now a rider-specific podcast. Comes out every Thursday. It is called The Rider Happy Hour, so check that out wherever you get this piece of content. It is just available in the Couch Potato Diary podcast feed, and it is also available in its own playlist here on YouTube. At 4, it is the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Yes, they lost. No, they didn't look very good at all in doing it, but I am going to chalk that up as a bad Zach Collaros game and think that they will bounce back in this particular contest. The defense, I thought, looked pretty good against Montreal. We're in some tough spots late, but I thought overall they played a pretty strong game. At 3, it's BC. Again, yes, they lose to Toronto. I thought for most of the game this looked like a strong team. I do think there are some limitations on the defensive side of the football that can maybe be exploited as the week or as the weeks go along. And offensively, it does feel like they need that guy at receiver. McInnis was really strong in this game, but I feel like they need one more playmaker on the offensive side now. But overall, this is a very good football team. At two, it's Toronto. I had them a little bit lower just mentally coming into the season, and I was really impressed with what I saw on both sides of the football. I thought the defense stepped up and made some incredible plays late as this game went along. So I think that this is a team that should be taken seriously in the CFL, even with the flux situation they have at quarterback right now. I thought Dukes looked fine, and he has some very talented pieces around him that will be able to to make an impact for him. And at number one, it's Montreal. I thought they had the most complete effort. I thought they had the most complete effort of the weekend going up against Winnipeg. I thought the offense moved the ball very effectively. I thought defensively they did a good job of shutting things down against Winnipeg. Now, I do think a lot of Winnipeg's issues were Zach Caleros related, but I still think this is a good defense. We'll see what the impacts are with no Stubblefield going forward, but I like this defense as the weeks go on, and I think Montreal right now looks like the best team in the CFL. For more CFL coverage, it is here on Couch Potato Diary. We are going to have CFL picks coming up on Thursday and Friday's shows. So that is it for the CFL talk. Now let's get into the Stanley Cup Finals, as the Edmonton Oilers are in a wee bit of a hole. So the Edmonton Oilers are in a bit of a pickle as they fall in Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final, and quite frankly, they were not good enough. They were, I think, pretty soundly outplayed by the Florida Panthers in Game 2 of this Stanley Cup Final. McDavid, I thought, was excellent. Hyman, I thought, was noticeable. The rest of the team kind of stunk. Darnell Nurse had a very good reason for not being noticeable, as he barely played. Fogle had a reason for not being noticeable. He barely played because he needed a guy. And we'll get to the officiating here in a second. But I just think right now, this team needs more than McDavid. Like, it is kind of similar, honestly, to what's going on with the Dallas Mavericks in the NBA Finals against the Boston Celtics, where Luka Doncic is going out there and balling out, but he needs some help. And Boston's done a good job of taking away the help from Luka, much like I think Florida has done a good job of taking away the help from the Oilers. The McDavid is running wild, but Draisaitl hasn't been, and we've been harping on him for a little bit now. I don't think he's right. I think there is some kind of injury that is bothering him, but they have done a really good job of limiting the non-McDavid Oilers in the first two games of this series, and that has them up 2-0. I talked with Avery. By the way, if you want more thoughts on Edmonton against Florida, I was on Game Over Edmonton for the post-game show, so check that out. But yeah, I thought that this was a time where Edmonton now, I think, needs to make the move and put the McDryman line together. I think that they are basically a one-line team anyway, and Draisaitl, I don't think, is a guy who, at this point, given his health, or my presumed, I guess, update on his health, I don't think he's a guy that can carry a line, but he can be a real good number two, as we saw at times in the Vancouver series. When they load that up, it is very difficult to stop and puts Draisaitl in a much better position, obviously. So I think it is the time now to load that one up, get the most you can out of that, and hope that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Henrique can kind of carry their own lines going forward. I think you put that together, because I feel like he's banged up, and you're not getting enough from him right now, so you may as well put him in the best complimentary role that you can. On the blue line, they could be dealt a real big blow with Darnell Nurse. He tried to come back in this game a couple of times, had relative degrees of success in doing so, but I thought that he had certainly some limitations, obviously, physically. That they have the extra day off, that is going to help out immensely. I think if he can't go, that is a devastating blow to this blue line. I think it would be worse, obviously, if it was Bouchard or Ekholm right now. But for all the flack that Nurse has taken throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs, he is one of the better defenders on this team. And when he is right, he is really, really strong. He has been, I think, saddled with an anchor for most of this postseason, and that has done him an incredible disservice. He's not a $9 million player. He just simply isn't. But he isn't the bad defenseman that a lot of people are making him out to be. And if you lose that from the lineup, you basically have two defensemen you trust. And going up against a deep team like the Florida Panthers is a problem. And it probably means more Cody Ceci than you would be comfortable with, even if you hadn't just healthy scratched him. It would be a big concern. Another concern on that blue line, Bouchard had a tough game. Overall, he played okay, but he got beat on two goals. And when you've only scored one, that becomes a problem. It was just a flat giveaway to Rodriguez, who snipes it home to give the Florida Panthers the lead. And then he gets beat along the wall. That ends up leading to the power play goal that the Panthers scored to finally break through. And he, overall, I think he had an okay game, but he just got beat in the biggest moments and his offense wasn't able to make up for it. None of the Oilers' offense has been able to make up for it. They haven't scored 5-on-5 this series. The only goal that Ekholm is able to get in there is on a 4-on-4 rush that he kind of surprises Bobrovsky and snaps one home. So the Edmonton Oilers are in a real jam right now. And they need all the help that they can get. They are getting help from their goalie. I thought Skinner was really good in this game. I thought that he was hung out to dry on the two goals that are on two of the late goals that went in on him. But overall, I think that he had a very, very strong outing here for the Edmonton Oilers. On the Panthers side, I thought they played an excellent game. Aaron Ekblad, that might have been the best game of his career. His use of the stick, his reading of the defensive zone, and his ability to make plays was at an all-time high. That looked like a number one defenseman in the night and a number one overall pick. That was just an exquisite hockey game that he played. And he and Forsling are such a good team, with Forsling's skating ability, Ekblad's awareness, and just all-around talent from both those guys. They did a hell of a job on Monday night in limiting the Edmonton Oilers, and specifically on the Oilers power play. I thought they did a great job with that. On the side of the offense, everyone was clicking. Bennett was really dangerous in this game. And I just, a quick aside, obviously you see the Oilers jersey behind me. I have a Blue Jays hat and a Raptor picture in the background, but based in Calgary, I talked about Sam Bennett his entire career in Calgary. His draft in 2014 was the first time that I was really going with Sportsnet 960 out here and was able to get on air a little bit. And he came in, and this is, to be fair, this is the Sam Bennett that everyone thought they were getting. He's Doug Gilmore, basically, which when you say that in Calgary, he wasn't this in Calgary. He spent 0 seconds like this in Calgary. And it wasn't they didn't give him opportunities. They gave him so many opportunities. Anytime he moved up, he broke through that ceiling of getting to the second or first line, he was dog shit. He was taking bad penalties. He was not contributing to plays. He was turning the puck over. He was a bad hockey player. There was playoff Sam Bennett absolutely existed. This guy was not here for 82 consecutive games. He would show up every now and then. This guy did not pop up like that in Calgary. And so how could the Flames give him up? Because he sucked when he played here. And now you can certainly discredit some of the developmental things or whatever it was that they were not able to unlock this version of Sam Bennett. That, criticize away. But that cat never showed up on this team. So I feel like some of the criticism on how could you possibly trade him is a little bit overdone right now. But he's been excellent. Diatribe aside, he's been phenomenal in this series. And Matthew Tkachuk has been really good as well. Barkov will see his availability. It sounds like it's leaning toward he'll be in for Thursday. But he gets popped in the mouth, and so that's a problem. So we will see what ends up coming from him. But overall, offensively, they were dynamite. The whole team, this was a really good game. Bobrovsky, again, was exceptional, although he was not tested a whole lot. The other part of this, the officiating. This was not a well-officiated hockey game. And, I don't have a major problem, pardon the pun, with Fogel getting the 5 in a game on the knee on knee. You can squint and see that could have been, I don't know, I don't think he went in there going, oh man, I really hate this guy's ACL. I'm going to try to take it out. But he didn't get out of the way in a way that you would think that he could have in that particular situation. So if you want to give him 5 in a game, fine. But then Bennett has to get a longer look than, yeah, that's probably 2. And then, again, to counter that, on the Edmonton side, Draisaitl needs to get a look for coming in and throwing a David Loiseau elbow at Sasha Barkov. 2 of you got that reference. But this was, This was a poorly officiated game. If it was a game management type of a thing, they lost complete control of it. If they were just trying to be fair and just call all the penalties, they lost control of it. They did a piss poor job of officiating. Now, I said this on Game Over last night. I'm going to say it again. That is not the reason why the Edmonton Oilers lost this game. The Edmonton Oilers lost this game because they were the second best team on the ice. Not because the officiating crew was the third best team on the ice. That this was a poorly officiated game, but that did not cost the Edmonton Oilers in this particular game. But that absolutely has to get better moving forward. I think that we need, on the clearing the puck out of the zone thing, I think that the control center needs to be able to call that. We don't need a 10-minute video review. Lord knows we don't need more reviews in this sport. But just like a, oh, hey, the officials are kind of talking, well, maybe that was, maybe that wasn't. Just like, it's one video that you can see. And if they can't tell in the time that it takes for you to get everyone ready to drop the puck, then it's inconclusive and we just move on with our lives. But they missed that one there as well. But no, this was a horrendously officiated hockey game. And I think it really took away from what we saw in this game. And lastly, Charles Barkley is awesome. That's all I have to say about that. The whole interview was just chef's kiss, amazing, and we need more sports personalities like that, and any talk that inside the NBA and all those guys are going away, I think is over-exaggerated. Maybe the show itself is going away, but the personality, like, Charles Barkley is going to end up on a broadcast somewhere. Amazon or NBC or ESPN are going to throw so much money at him. Same with Shaq, and I think same with Kenny as well. All those guys are going to have jobs. It's just a matter of where, I think. And what does it all look like? And who, the real concern is who gives them the freedom to be what Chuck was on Monday night out there in Florida. All right, that's going to do it for the show. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. We still have a lot to get to as the week goes on. Like I said, Rider Happy Hour on Thursday. Colorado Cast will be coming out at some point. Things have just kind of gotten a little crazy around here. I know I say that all the time, but I will be getting Colorado Cast this week. I also want to recap Monday Night Raw, getting ready for Clash of the Castle. So still a lot to get to. There isn't going to be an official Couch Potato Diary podcast tomorrow, but we'll get back at it Thursday and Friday. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Follow me on social media. I am at Primetime Klein. Thank you to Haley McGoldrick, and thank you to you. Have a good day, everybody. I'm out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job, or your deodorant, or your lunch, or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.